The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, Sangha. So here we are again. You know, life is filled with cycles, natural cycles, human-created cycles. And they can give much meaning and richness to our lives, a sense of continuity, of stability, of purpose. I was moved this morning by Master Dogen's words. In the practice period is the Buddha's instruction, an authentic custom that maintains the Buddha Dharma and Sangha treasure. And to think about, what is it that actually maintains this? Right? There are the teachings, there's the history of Buddhism. There are individuals who practice Buddhism. There are communities that practice Buddhism, but what is it that actually maintains the Buddha Dharma and Sangha treasure, the heart of the Dharma? The essential point of what the Buddha spent his whole life teaching for. That even though that essential truth is within each of us, we call it Buddha nature, is within every living thing, that's always been true. It was true before the Buddha. It would be true if there had never been a Buddha. But to bring that out is a whole nother matter. And so to appreciate that these practice ways that we have are the essential parts of our vessel, right? It's how we do this, and so we return to these practices. We return to our zazen every day. We return to our liturgy, to our study. We return to Ango. And because we return, one of the key elements is that it be fresh and alive. And that really, you know, is both an invitation and a challenge to each of us, because we can so easily become dulled and dull within things that come around again. And so this, all of this is a way not only to mark a beginning, but also to make us fresh again, so that we can do this again for the first time. You know, in a way, there's nothing more stale than stale spiritual practice, because it has so much potential, and it has come down to us through so much tremendous effort and dedication. And to let that grow stale, it's like you make an incredible cake and then you don't eat it. So what I wanted to say a little bit about is, first is the theme, Sangha, expressing gratitude, right relationship with the world. I couldn't make it more succinct than that, so. And as I was reflecting on that yesterday, I thought of an old farm woman, Miss Mary Kinney, that I lived with and spent time on her farm in North Georgia for a while. And I was thinking of this theme, right relationship with the world, expressing gratitude, Sangha, and thinking about that in the context of our world and our time and this year and what is happening. And I heard her say, "Hey, Lord." She would say that. "Hey, Lord," which could be, "Ain't it beautiful? Ain't it awful?" So I thought that this would be a good practice, a good thing to turn our attention to really make conscious, because we need this. The whole we needs this. In the Upadesutta, the Buddha said, or Ananda said to the Buddha, This is half of the holy life, Lord. Admirable friendship, admirable companionship, admirable camaraderie. And the Buddha said, don't say that, Ananda. Admirable friendship, admirable companionship, and admirable camaraderie is actually the whole of the holy life. When a student has admirable people as friends and companions and comrades, they can then be expected to develop and pursue the Noble Eightfold Path. Then they can be expected to do that. And so during this intensive, that's what we're going to be studying. And as I often say, the themes for our Ango are never new. They're never anything novel. They're always, you know, the lifeblood of what we do every day, but we just bring one aspect to the surface and focus on that in a particular way. So this ocean gathering has come together, you folks at home. We have our students in New Zealand who actually beat us to it. They've already begun Ango because their sun rises earlier than ours. And so we come together, this ocean gathering, to meet the Dharma, to meet each other, and in essence, to meet ourselves, because that's really what the Buddha is saying. That in order for admirable friends, comrades, and companions to now allow us to develop and pursue the Noble Eightfold Path, something very essential has to happen within ourselves for all of that to work. What does it mean to intensify our practice? We characterize Ango that way. Because we can think of intensifying or creating more intensity in very specific ways. Oftentimes it means with more tension, right? To intensify. So let's think of it as to come closer, to practice with what is essential, with greater intention, greater attention, with more sincerity, with more urgency, with more freshness. Because when we do that, we have come closer. And when something comes closer, it's more present, it's more immediate. We see it more keenly. It's more alive. In a sense, that's what we're always trying to do, is make ourselves available to the Dharma so that it can enter fully. That's why when we practice and things become more clear, we experience things more closely. Simple things, ordinary things are more alive. I think almost all of us have that experience. And that's a way of thinking about intensifying, to do that now consciously, intentionally. Because time does swiftly pass by. Opportunities are lost. So we're here today, we know this. Congratulations, we're fortunate. We should know that. We're fortunate to be able to do this. Tomorrow, next Ango, next year, we can have plans, we can expect, but we don't know. And so to not waste. Right relationship. So obviously I'm drawing on the teaching of the Eightfold Path, right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, so on. And relationship is defined as the way two or more things, objects, concepts, people, are connected. How do they connect? How do they relate to each other? What is their relationship? How do they meet each other? By blood, by marriage, by karma, by path, by nature? The way we regard each other, behave towards each other. It can be a way of thinking of our relationship to each other. It can be emotional, physical, mental, spiritual. Right relationship, as with the Eightfold Path, right here means, think of it as being in accord with the Dharma, which ultimately means being in accord with what is true, what is real. Right? The Buddha didn't create a system that we call reality. In his enlightenment, he experienced that which is real, which is not created by any human action. did not suddenly appear in the moment of his enlightenment, but rather because in the moment of his enlightenment he encountered it. And so right means to be in that relationship, in that state with wisdom and compassion. And in talking about right understanding, thought and speech, right relationship, very often today teachers will sort of make it very quickly, you know, say it's not about right and wrong. That's true. But it is certainly true that we can have an understanding, intention, we can be speaking in ways that is not true, are not true, are not in accord with the way things are. How do we know? Dukkha, samsara. Samsara is the result of not being in accord. Dukkha is the inevitable result of not being in a right relationship. And so to be in right contact, in right seeing, in right hearing, perceiving, right thinking. In every moment, I remember years ago, many, many years ago, one of the residents said to Dada Roshi that, why doesn't the Dharma say anything about relationship? And I think that was the only time I saw him kind of speechless. Because he was thinking, it's about nothing but relationship. And I think the person was asking about relationships, partners, lovers, you know, those aspects. But in every moment in which we are aware, we are in contact, there are senses. And mind, remember, is one of our senses, which means we are in some kind of relationship, some kind of contact with something, a person, an idea, an object, a memory, a situation. And what we know, what the Dharma teaches and what we discover, or will discover if we haven't yet, and we practice, is that this habit-bound mind, our mind that is karmic in its creation and in its ongoing manifestation, reacts to that stimulation, to that contact, and floods it, our perception, with self-biased thoughts and memories and associations and desires and expectations and so on. And then the ensuing disappointment or pain and confusion or resentment or conflict is the result. And those then become the objects of our attachments. That's samsara. So that's the machinations of samsara, the turnings of our desires and our grasping. And all along, what the Buddha realized is, you are okay. From the beginning, you are okay. And that thing that's in front of you, it's okay too. In its basic nature, in its essence, fundamentally. But it's in that, what we're calling relationship. And so we have to really think about this in this context in a much larger way, because we tend to so easily think of that in terms of relationship with a person. And it's in that moment, in that connection, whatever we call it, our perceptions, our response, that's where we study. That's where we delude ourselves, that's where we enlighten ourselves. But that before the beginning, everything was and is in a right relationship with the world. When I say that everything abides within a basic state of peace, saying the same thing. And for that to be true, everything that is in a right relationship with the world has to be in a right relationship with itself. To have one without the other is not possible. That's what the Buddha taught. That's why the idea of self-liberation, I'm going to get mine, good luck to you, as though there's no connection, as though we are not mutually bound, both in our delusion and our enlightenment, is not true. And so we might think that in that way, all things being in a state of peace, all things being in a state of right relationship, we might say that then now all things are also in a state of gratitude in their own way, expressing that in their own way. We express it in our ways, in the human world. a gratitude for all things, recognizing with or without consciousness that without that right relationship, nothing is possible. None of this is possible. We were born this way. We are this way in reality in every moment, but we get bewildered. We have lots of attachments, so it's not so easy to live. That's why the teachings say it's much easier to do harm than it is to do good. It's much easier to get entangled in what we think of as obstructive and negative than it is to free ourselves. And what are the signs of this? So I was thinking of Yukon, who passed away this week, did a first memorial this morning. Choke, his ordination name means calm spirit. Yukon means playful perseverance. And he came here very early, a year or two maybe before I showed up on the doorstep. Took him a while to enter in more fully, become a student, which he did in 93. Then he went on to come into residency, become ordained. He was a chief disciple. And I was thinking about how he was a living example, one of many, but a good living example of how a person can be changed and change others through compassion and loving kindness. He loved people easily, and he easily made people feel loved and appreciated. And I remember when he was diagnosed with his brain tumor, he and I and Jimon were in the hospital with him before his surgery. And he said, you know, I've had a wonderful life. So much more wonderful, he said, than I ever expected to have. He said, I don't need to live forever. Because at that point he was considering treatment, whether to do treatment. He said, I don't need to live forever. And we talked about, because the tumor was already affecting his speech and he had aphasia, and so that was starting to shift and diminish. And I said, can we just appreciate a couple of ironies here? That you who had the gift of gab, shall we say, now are struggling to speak. And you who made so many people feel loved, and now in your illness, they're all going to want to come and see you. And he went, I know. I know. He said, it's going to be too much. And I said, you did this, you know. And so we talked about that. I said, look, you know, that's what you've given your life to. So your vow of service continues. And it includes, as it always has, you serving yourself, doing what you need to do. So when you need to turn inward, you turn inward. I said at one point when he was in the Jizo house, I said, because we were talking about people coming to visit, and he was, you know, it was hard for him. It was emotionally hard for him. You know, he wanted it, but it was a lot, because he had a lot he needed to be doing. And I said, look, people just want to be with you, see you, speak to you. I said, if it's too much, just act like you're asleep. Now he's changed his form. So now how is all of that compassion, loving kindness being manifested? And what do we do with feelings of loss, sadness, grief? What is right relationship with those strong emotions? With Yukon, with illness and death, with loss. Right and right relationship is not about an opinion. It's not about having an opinion about something. But it is pointing to how we can avoid creating unnecessary suffering. The Buddha said there is struggle in life that we can't avoid because we have this human body. But there is a lot of what Buddhism is really addressing in dukkha, in suffering, that is our creation. So the Buddha said, how does a student who has admirable people as friends and companions develop and pursue the noble eightfold path? Well, there's the case where a student develops right view dependent on seclusion and dispassion and cessation and relinquishment. They develop right intention, right speech, right action through their seclusion and dispassion and cessation and relinquishment. This is how a student who has admirable friends and companions develops and pursues the Eightfold Path. And so we can think Sangha to be in solitude within your own mind, within your own zazen, within your study. Dispassion is learning how to navigate and free ourselves of the strong emotions that overwhelm us, that grip us, that can influence us in ways that we wouldn't be, to act in ways we wouldn't otherwise, but without denying, without being mired. Cessation is seeing the nature of our thoughts and emotions and sensations, empty of their own force and agency. Relinquishment is letting go. Letting go of what is not helpful and letting go of what is helpful. Living a life within non-attachment, non-clinging. And in this way, we come into right relationship. We practice right relationship with ourselves so we can be in that way with others. And we practice being in that way with others because it motivates us and compels us, if we're sincere, to do that work within our own self so that we can be in good relationship with others, right relationship with others. We see how interdependent they are. To love your enemy, I think, is to be in right relationship simply with somebody we find difficult, very difficult. And so it's based in and harmonious with the Dharma. And so in that, it continuously is bringing us back into the teachings, into our practice, demanding that. That's why we take refuge. Taking refuge is relying on that. We realize, oh, I need this. I rely on this in order to live in the way that I aspire to, that I have dedicated myself to doing. I can't just do that because I want to. I can't just do that because I've said I will. I have to actually do it. How do I actually do it? When I have formed all of these long-standing habits that take me in other ways. So I have to rely on the Dharma. I have to rely on the teachings, on my practice, on you, all of you. In right relationship, is there anything or anyone that we should leave out? We might ask ourselves that question. And if the answer is yes, there's somebody or something, some situation you'd like to leave out, just do that knowingly. Own up to it. Right? Because when we do that, it's honest. It's honest. But it also brings it into our attention in a different way than if we just kind of scoot by. When we exclude another, in a sense, we've already excluded some part of ourselves. So in this ango, this theme is inviting us to study right relationship with each other, with our teachers and ancestors, people living and deceased, family members, friends, strangers, whoever we come across. But let's let it include other creatures too, living and insentient creatures, clouds, stars, mountains, rivers, soil, air. And we can let it include more. Because again, everything, anything we have a perception of, we are in relationship. So what about media, technology, politics, politicians, our possessions? It gets pretty big. So during this ango, we will be, as you saw, we're doing this ango without a chief disciple. So there are angos where that happens, where there's nobody who I feel is quite ready. And this is to say that, you know, we've been here a long, you know, I mean, in terms of Buddhist geologic time, we just got here. But for us, we've been here for a while. Seems like we've been here for a while. And so we have a lot of fine students, mature people with good world experience, life experience, mature in their lives, mature in their relationships. We have students who are developing nicely in their Dharma understanding. We have students who are very active in being part of the Sangha, engaging, and not just showing up to do session and going home, but actually engaging, like being part of this in various ways. There are 100,000 ways to do that. And actually, all of those are important. When I consider a chief disciple, I think about all of those aspects. Because sometimes one aspect is very strong, but there needs to be a little bit more work in other ways. And of course, nothing is to perfection, but it's developing. It's developing. And in a way, as the seniors, which constitute such an important body within the Sangha, and it's one of the gifts of having been here a while, is having had time to develop a more substantial senior student body, it's enormously important. I see that all the time, how important that is, because I remember when it wasn't so, when they were scant. I mean, I used to think a senior student was like, you know, a day away from being a fully transmitted teacher. It was hard to understand. But as we've had more seniors, it's easier to understand, sort of put it in context of how that fits into the whole path of training. And it's enormously important to the Sangha. And in that way, the seniors have become more important in the Sangha, to the Sangha. They're doing more, serving more. And so that's part of it, you know, is that it's not just about having Dharma understanding, it's about, you know, helping to make all of this work well. And so doing the Anga without a chief disciple doesn't make the Anga any less. I'll be doing a retreat in March. I'm going to be away in April for 3 weeks. I'm going to Korea with Jimon, my partner. We were there 30 years ago. That was a gift from the Sangha. Thank you. And it's been 30 years since we've gone. She was, as many of you know, was born there, orphaned, adopted by an American family. And that was the first time she'd been back since she'd been born. So we're going back again in a different way, I think in a more ready way to be there. And so we're going to be away for 3 weeks. So that's, you know, a chunk of time, but I'm not in the least bit worried because we have a newly Denkai'd priest and Dharma holder Gokhan and senior students and monastics and a mature Sangha. And so things will continue very well, I have no doubt. But I won't do an intensive later in the Anga as I normally do, but I'll do a retreat in March, which is, we're going to be looking at the teaching of Dogen's on the four methods of the Bodhisattva and sort of using the teacher-student relationship as a way to look at right relationship. Of course, we'll be doing mandos on the theme. I'll be doing one this month. Shōen and Gokhan will be doing one in April. Then I'll come back and do one in May. We'll be doing Fusatsu. Hojun has a very full and rich schedule of programs and training at the temple. They're doing Anga opening right now there. Hogan Sensei will continue doing his practicing members practice training on the web, on the internet. As I said, New Zealand students will be practicing Anga there. And so it really is a Sangha-wide event. And to think about, you know, every day training happening here, every day at the temple, New Zealand and Buffalo, different affiliate groups, but also in your homes. So think about all of the practitioners of the Sangha, all of those names that were read, and others who may not have been able to join formally, but are going to participate in whatever way they can, that every morning, think of it as like the practitioner wakes up and lights a little fire, a little Dharma fire, right? And so like as the sun comes up, boop, 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 there are all these little Dharma fires that are being lit, right? What a wonderful image. And, you know, there's a a lot of fires burning, right, in New York City, in New York, and then as you spread out, right, they're still there. They're not quite as concentrated, but in Northeast, down South, and, you know, wherever Sangha members are. So it's a nice image to think of how we're all doing this, right? We're all doing this. And we're doing it together, right, in different places. And so being a home practitioner, one of the challenges is, okay, how do you do this? How do you wake up and know that you're in Ango, something that is meaningful to you, right? Because that's what it's about. It's for you. So how do you, what do you do today? What have you planned for yourself? What commitments have you made? How do you wake up in such a way that you feel like tomorrow is different from yesterday, right? We're doing Ango now, so it will be different here. So how do you do that in such a way? Because in that, when you have that felt sense that you're in Ango, it's come closer now. It's more immediate. There's a sense of, yes, we're doing this. And that means it's more alive, it's more active. There's more strength in it. There are a number of readings, study suggestions that we made, and they're all good, I think. So obviously, otherwise we wouldn't recommend them. So please, and most of them are short, like the sutra that I drew from this morning, the Upada, is almost the whole sutra I read. There's another one that's very good about how we can utilize each other to know how we're practicing. There's verses from the Theragata, the verses of the female disciples of the Buddha, ordained disciples, which are very powerful, very beautiful. There's the book by Wendy Garland, and we're actually having her come. When is that, Jerry? Do we have it? In the summer, so it won't be in time for Ango. But she wrote the book, The Woman Who Raised the Buddha, The Extraordinary Life of Mahaprajapati, the Buddha's mother or aunt who raised him as his mother. And it's a wonderful book, and it's scholarly, and it's also a lot of good stories, historical stories, as a way of looking at the Buddha and Mahaprajapati and the essential, important role that she played, not only in the Buddha's life, but in the life of Buddhism, being recognized as the first ordained woman. And so I really encourage everyone to take that book up. It's really worthwhile. I've also been asked to make a public service announcement by the training staff regarding Sesshin. So when you sign up for Sesshin, and it says there's a waiting list, right? It's already filled up and it's a waiting list. That language we can't change, right? It's bound to the program that we use. It's not a waiting list. The Sesshin isn't actually full yet, okay? We initiate that early so that there are spaces left so that we can, certain people who will remain anonymous so they don't get badgered or bribed, who can try and sort of have fairness in giving everybody a chance to come in and do Sesshin, right? Because some people can, you know, it's easy for them to come so they can sign up way in advance. And so we're just trying to make things a little bit more equitable. And so the waiting list really means registration pool. Think of it that way. Okay, so don't not sign up when there's a waiting list. You could still very much get in. And further, if there are any extenuating circumstances, like you haven't been able to come to Sesshin in a long time, or because of work or whatever obligations you have, this is the only window you have for a long time. If you have extenuating circumstances, let us know that. Contact us and tell us that. And that gets factored in, okay? So we're really trying, we want everybody to come, okay? But we're also trying to keep the Sesshins a manageable size so they're not a little sort of overly packed. And also that there are other ways to come and train, to come and do some periods of residency, even just a few days or a week, to come and do for students, to do the refuge week. is an excellent way to come. It gives you an opportunity to do more self-guided practice and be here with the Sangha. So there are other ways that we're trying to provide and encourage so that we're not just relying on Sesshin. You know, Sesshin is so important and it's very particular. And there are different things that happen, different aspects of our training that are cultivated when we're here in other ways than Sesshin. It brings us into different kinds of relationship, for instance, with the Sangha, and different aspects of training that happen during the Sesshin. So. And then, of course, we'll all be studying Dogen's fascicle on the four methods of the Bodhisattva: giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and identity action. And it's a really wonderful fascicle. It's one of the more accessible fascicles, you might say, of Dogen's. And so we're going to be drawing on that as well. So please, you know, these each of these teachings are fairly short. And so I really encourage you to, even though we're not going to be focusing so much singularly on one, to spend time with each of them and really let them help you. So I'd like to dedicate this Ango to Yukon, to his past and living presence, memory, to all that he gave. He's everywhere in this place. Everybody leaves a little piece of themselves here, some more than others. He was a kind of a big guy, so he left a big impression. And so I'd like to keep his image and his bowl that he received with ordination and his kesa, that's the robe that's wrapped, there until the funeral, which will be on the 31st. But we will, throughout the Ango, keep him present and together with us. The practice period is the Buddha's instruction, a true custom that maintains Buddha Dharma Sangha treasure. Peaceful dwelling is here and now. It is this training period. It is the heart and mind of everyone. When we abide peacefully in the practice period, we're in right relationship. And abiding peacefully means knowing how to abide when we're not peaceful. When we're not peaceful, how do we abide peacefully within our disturbances, within our entanglements? There is a way. It's not what you think. It's not an idea. It's more real than that. And so let's enter in. We have launched. And let's really appreciate this gift. We really are so fortunate to have these teachings and these forms of practice come down to us that have been developed over these hundreds of years and have so much power and help to shape us and shape how we, as Dada would say, combust ourselves, and that we can do that together. What more could we ask for? So, we're not going to have a hike today. It might have been possible because of the weather, but we had to make a decision early, and I thought with Yukon's passing, maybe we would just sort of extend our lunch a little bit or just give people an opportunity to be together before everybody heads off. I thought that might be helpful. And then if you can are able to come back for the funeral for Yukon on the 31st, please do that. It'll be at the end of our March Sesshin. And if not, we'll be live streaming the Zendo portion of it. Correct? Yep. And so you can join us in that way. Okay, so thank you everybody for being here. Let's make this a very wonderful, strong period of practice.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.